So here we are in week 5 of session 11. I've been looking ahead a little to session 12. My schedule is, there's some things going on in my schedule. I may have to make some changes in session 12, but I'll talk about that next week because it's not definite. So what's definite is that we're focused on two different texts today, Visions of Knowledge and an excerpt from Love of Knowledge. And as always, it's a lot of material. We'll start with Visions of Knowledge. And I actually want to have us do a couple of short practices pretty early on in the session today. And we'll see how that goes. So it's helpful to remember in the Visions of Knowledge reading, it's helpful to remember that we are, what we're reading is the introduction to the first part of Visions of Knowledge, which nobody ever looks at. It's too bad because there's wonderful material there, but you would have to work your way into it. It's a series of questions that Rinpoche encourages exploring. There's 60 different questions. And I've not worked with that in any detail, a tiny little bit I have. But it would be valuable, but we'll have to postpone that for another time. It could be a course in itself, and it might be difficult. It might be a challenging course to do, but it's something to consider. But at least we're reading the introduction to it. So what we're reading is an introduction, you could say, to a path of questioning and why that's valuable. But what we actually will focus on to begin with is the very interesting things that Rinpoche has to say about imagination. So first of all, the theme that Rinpoche introduces here, this is at the top of page 6, which was the beginning of our reading for today, the theme that Rinpoche introduces is that we would like to make a transition from conceptual knowledge to a knowledge that's active in our being. So that's one way of talking about knowledge in the TSK vision. It's a knowledge that's active in our being. It's actually, you know, from time to time I reflect on why Rinpoche uses the word knowledge. A lot of people, I think, would be happier if he used the word wisdom. Found some other word. They don't like the word knowledge. But that's because the word knowledge is usually understood in terms of conceptual knowledge. We know something about something. We can state true propositions about things. That's our usual understanding of knowledge. And one way that Rinpoche talks about that in Love of Knowledge, which I think is very powerful, is as descriptive knowledge. But here he describes it as conceptual knowledge, and we want to make a shift from conceptual knowledge to a knowledge that is active in our being. So we have this word active, and we're talking about activating the vision. So even though last week, I guess it was, we saw Rinpoche criticize even that notion that we would activate the vision, still, we're using that language, and I think it helps point toward exactly this distinction. We want to move toward a knowledge that is active in our being, and in the same way you could say we want to activate a space, the power of space to accommodate, and the dynamic of time that presents. So here we're talking about activating knowledge. I'm going to try to move. Okay. So how do we do that? And the way that Rinpoche introduces right at the outset here is that we can draw on the power of imagination. So let's get more clear on what Rinpoche actually means when he talks about imagination. I'm making some adjustments in the video trying to get rid of that moiré pattern, but it doesn't seem that I can. Okay. The power of imagination. Now, usually when we think of imagination, we are thinking of something that isn't real, right? And you know, the root meaning of imagination has to do with images. So something, it's a little bit like fantasy. or it's related to the word imitation. It's not real, it's less than real. That is not at all what Rinpoche is talking about here. And in fact, he's not talking about something that is different from our ordinary experience. He's talking about a different way, for the most part. There are various aspects to imagination. But for the most part, he's talking about imagination that lets us inhabit our own world differently. We don't leave the reality that we inhabit, we imagine it differently. So, let's take a look at the first, the second paragraph on page 6, because he says that very clearly. He says, to imagine a world in which reality depends on constructs. Okay, so let's stop there for a moment. What he's saying is that our ordinary world is based on constructs, on the way we conceptualize the world, on the way we describe the world. That's the reality we ordinarily live in. And he's saying we don't necessarily have to leave that world, but we can imagine it differently. So let's see what that means. So to imagine a world in which reality depends on constructs does not mean retreating into fantasy. Instead, it means entering that world with its prevailing logic and its presupposed order as fully as we can. Can we allow the governing vision of our present way of being, the governing vision of our present way of being, to unfold within us? Can we savor its subtle blend of flavors? Can we explore from that perspective the ways in which we conduct our lives? So that is what he's suggesting we can do. And the rest of this page, really the main theme I want to be focusing on for a while here, is all laid out on this first page of the reading. We rely on our concepts, and we live in a world that's structured by our concepts. And so when we engage that world, we engage it through our concepts. And remember, we talked the other day about how the word concept really means taking hold of something. A concept is a way to take a hold of something. But what that means then is that we put it at a distance. We take hold of it through the concept, and that means we have to have a distance between us and it. And our ordinary way of knowing depends on that distance. It's the subject-object structure. It's polar knowledge. It's a way of being which separates us from being. Because whatever we look at conceptually. And imagination is meant to be, or is being presented here, as a way in which we can engage that world differently. So the idea is, just to take a simple example, if I look at a plant in front of me, what I engage looking at the plant is the construct, my conception of plant, right? And if it's a plant I've seen before, it's sitting there on my table or on a shelf in this case, and I know all about it. So it's all based on something I've already described to myself in advance, and I don't really engage it at all. So when I imagine this world of the plant, I imagine, and this is a little hard to say, this is what Rinpoche he says it very nicely on page 6, so I don't know that I have to paraphrase it too much, but I imagine not just the aliveness of the plant or the presence of the plant, that's a part of it. So I sort of imagine myself out of my conception of a plant and into a world in which the plant is really there. That's one way of practicing. But he's actually mostly focusing on something a little different. Right? He's saying we can imagine that. Actually, we'll do this in two different steps. So let's do the first step, and that's what I pretty much just said. We imagine the plant instead of conceiving of the plant. So in the next paragraph, he says, because we rely on concepts, we lack imagination. Because we lack imagination, we accept as real the conceptual structures of the world we currently conceive. We live in a world that is based on conceptual structures, and imagining that world means imagining our way into a deeper relationship, a relationship of intimacy, you might say, because we've been talking about intimacy for a while now, a world in which we are intimately connected, that's not a strong enough word, but we're intimately connected with the being of that world. So if you look at page 9, we'll jump ahead a little bit, he talks about something very similar to that. And I'm not going to go into detail here, I just want to quote a phrase really at the top of page 9. He says, we can imagine the fullness of experience. And actually just before that, he's talking about questioning now, but he says, there's a spontaneous intimacy that comes when we are fully and effortlessly engaged. So this is one way of talking about an approach that we have explored many times in many different ways, because it's very central in the TSK vision, and that is not to rely on concepts, but to imagine the fullness of being and engage that fullness of being instead of relying on the distanced way of knowing that depends on concepts. So imagination, in this sense, is a way of knowing, a different way of knowing, and one that's more in tune with the TSK vision. So let's start by doing a short practice. We'll just do about 3 minutes, where we actually do that. Let yourself engage your experience, the space around you, the objects in that space, your sense of being in that space. It could be any of those or all of those. It could also be mental activity. It could be memories, although it's probably easier if you stay focused on what's around you. And when you look around you, the first thing you're going to see is your conceptual version of this space that you inhabit, this world that you inhabit. And what we're going to try to do for just a few minutes is imagine the fullness of being that is, in a sense, underneath or within the conceptual world that we inhabit. So let's try that for a few minutes, 3 minutes, as I say, okay? Okay, let's come back together. As I say, this is something that we have explored in different ways many times. But every way of formulating it, every way of looking into it offers new possibilities. So I'd be interested if any of you want to share anything. I will say something while I'm waiting to see if there are any other comments, and that is that it seems to me that when you let yourself imagine the fullness of what you experience, it moves you away from the usual sense of a firm identity. So one way to describe that is that I was looking at that same plant, if I look at that plant, it's got its own aliveness, it's got its own history, it's got its growing. Behind that, it's got the person and the situation, the person who gave me that plant. There's a fullness. We move more, this is how I would tend to say it, right now, at least, this morning, for me, we move into the fullness of the field of experience. We don't separate things out quite so much. And then, of course, that includes myself as the one who is having that that experience. Okay, well, I don't see anybody commenting, so I'm going to move ahead into the second part of this little exercise, because Rinpoche goes on to offer a somewhat more subtle take on this, or another take, at least, let's say, on how you could do this. So so if we look in this third paragraph again on page 6, he's saying we lack imagination. And that means that we accept the conceptual structures of the world we currently conceive, I'm quoting, we accept those as real, and we can't imagine it otherwise. And then he offers an alternative, and that's where we want to go now. He says, a good way to shift away from these limits is to imagine richly what it means to live in a world shaped by our own constructs. All that we encounter and that shapes our lives seems so substantial, so unquestionable. If this sense of substance originates through our thinking it is so, something truly magical is at work. So what Rinpoche is saying here is that we have the option of, or the possibility is open to us, let's say. The possibility is open to us of imagining. Oh, wait a second. I just had 87 chats pop up. Maybe I wasn't looking at them the right way before. Okay, let me go back and look at those then. But then we'll move into this and I'll say a little more about it. So Ron says, quoting quite a ways back, I'm sorry, somehow I didn't see these, saying wisdom is too far removed. I'd say, you know, so back to my question about why do we say knowledge instead of wisdom. And yeah, I would say too far removed from our ordinary knowledge, for one thing. And then Ron asks, when you say the being of that world, you mean that we are intimately being in knowledge that knows no separation? Is that a question? I mean, that is a question. And yes, I mean, we're aiming for a kind of intimacy that doesn't have any separation. And it seems as though imagination is a vehicle for arriving at that intimacy. Eliana says, it helps a lot for me to practice the exercise subject-object reversal. Of course, we've looked at that in the past, but not for a while. With this exercise, I can feel the drive from subject and also from object and find a balance between them. This balanced connection helps me to feel the aliveness and the fullness of being. It seems that connection is the key to the fullness of being. So yes, I was using the word intimacy, as it's a little more powerful than the word connection, but when we imagine our world, if we imagine it fully, and Rinpoche uses the word imagining richly, then a part of that fullness is the relationship between subject and object, or really better, because that's a more limited way of saying it, the relationship between self and world. Although when he talks about subject-object reversal, that's very rich, so I take it back. That's a fine way to talk about it. Okay. I think now we're talking, we're back at the point where people are commenting on this exercise, and Ron says, it was strange. I sensed many beings in space in my room, almost a cacophony of intelligences that were normally invisible and inaudible. Well, that's interesting. That's an imagining richly. And, you know, we aren't concerned in imagination. Truth and falsity are conceptual structures. We're not concerned with those. It's which doesn't mean, you know, relativism, but I'm not going to go into that. That's just my little issue that comes up, so I won't worry about it. That is how, in the fullness of imagination, the world that you constructed appeared to you. Okay. Philip says, imagine seeing the plant or flower as if we had no previous experience of anything at all. That's a very nice way to think about it. To undo the past, you could say. No words to describe it, nothing to compare it to, no previous sense of being separate. I can't see me, because there's no mirror, right? And if you did see you in the mirror, that would be another object, really, one that you identified with in a particular way. I can't see me, so I just don't exist separately from the plant or flower. And he asks, is that right? That's a question. The sense of separation, well, you could go into that sense of separation, too, if it's there. But if it's not there, if you imagine away the past of the flower, and that's kind of the opposite of what I was saying, I did, but if you imagine away the past of the flower, and you imagine away the structure which calls it a flower, and so on, you may also imagine a disappearance of the distance between you and the flower, or the separation, as you say. Okay, Michael says, I thought, oh gee, nobody was interested in this exercise, but somehow I just missed all these comments. I see that Karen, by the way, has lost the audio connection. I don't know, Kathleen, if you can help her in some way. But anyway, let's go on. Michael says, the first response to this exercise is to hold back from the usual labeling of an object, which immediately substitutes a concept for any kind of richer experience. Well, that's right. It's the labeling that gives us the concept. This made me more interested, engaged, and I keep looking. I can't say that I noticed imagination so much as a willingness to stay present. Right, well, you wouldn't exactly notice, oh, now I'm imagining, right? You would just be engaging. You'd be present in a different way. You'd be exercising the power of imagination. I think that's related to what Rinpoche says here. Okay. David says, feels like a more allowing awareness, an opening of focus, or a relaxing of focus to let more in, more of the sensual, more of what's happening in the other room, phone calls by others to relatives thousands of miles away, so that's what you're hearing, I gather, and what they're feeling and thinking. So that does relate to what I was saying about opening to a field, you know, not conceptually, and this, of course, has to do with space, but conceptually, we are always labeling and identifying, and that puts us in a world of objects with a subject that is at a distance from those objects, but is knowing them in a particular way. If you kind of wipe clean that conceptual structure, then that's where you come closer to intimacy. Right? Or allowing, as you say, David, or relaxing, letting more in. And Ron says, it sounds like Rinpoche is saying, we imagine our limits into being. Well, that's kind of related to where we're going to go next, so I'll postpone that for a moment. And then Sudhi says, still commenting on the exercise, I find myself too engrossed in the object, some sort of being consumed with the presence of all that I encounter, as if there is a far-seeing or overall-seeing that is missing. Well, that's interesting. So you encounter a kind of obstacle here where the object kind of takes over. You know, that's interesting because it's presumably not your usual experience. But you also experience it as a new kind of limit because you kind of lose the sense of openness. Well, that's an interesting move or an interesting experience, I should say. It may be transitional. It's something to explore. Okay, so now let's move on to the second part of this exercise, and I can see that, as I expected actually, we aren't going to get that far, but we'll do this, and then I want to make another point, but let's go ahead and finish this exercise. So Rinpoche offers a second approach here, and we're still on page 6. He's talking about how concepts, because we rely on concepts, we don't have access to imagination. We lack imagination. And that's actually why we accept the concepts as real. So that's what we've been exploring in the first part of this object. Or first part of this practice. So now we're going to go on to the second part because he introduces it here. He says, a good way, and I'm at the last full paragraph on page 6, a good way to shift away from these limits is to imagine richly what it means to live in a world shaped by our own constructs. All that we encounter and that shapes our lives seems so substantial, so unquestionable. So concepts give us a world, and we say, yes, that's the world. It's the real world. It's substantial. There's no doubt about it. There's a plant over there. I'm sitting here in a chair. We're holding this class. All of these things are completely unquestionable. And at the same time, they're also based on a conceptual understanding of the world, based on the labels that we've applied to our situation. Are concepts wrong? No. No. Are concepts, do they close down imagination? Yes, that's what Rinpoche is suggesting. But they also have this tremendous power, and that's what he's pointing to here. He says, everything that we encounter seems so substantial. If this sense of substance originates through our thinking it is so, something truly magical is at work. Now notice that the word magical sounds kind of like imagining. I looked them up in the dictionary and they don't seem to be related, but somebody could do more research in that. But in any event, we're talking about something magical. What is the magic? Concepts are the magic. And that's the very interesting move that Rinpoche makes here. So if we keep reading, he says, bound to concepts, we have lost sight of the magical operation of mind that makes the conceptualization of reality possible. But imagination can reclaim for knowledge the power implicit in this wondrous way of being. So here's this move, and it's what I'd like us to try to explore now for a few minutes. He's saying that when we look at the world and we experience it in our ordinary way, in our conceptual way, and Ron's, yeah, okay, Ron says here, concepts are imagination forgotten. And that's really what Rinpoche is saying here, that's right. We accept the world that concepts give us, but we forget to notice how amazing it is that we construct a world on the basis of our conceptual understanding. And that's what Rinpoche asks us to imagine here. to imagine fully or richly the power at work in our conceptual understanding. So the world is exactly our ordinary world, but we allow ourselves to imagine, you could say, experience fully, but that's a very vague, you know, here imagination is it offers something a little more, I think, but we allow ourselves to imagine the power of our conceptual minding, our thinking, to create a world that makes sense to us. So what we're doing is focusing on our conceptual activity as we engage the world. The concept, you know, it's not thinking something different from our experience. It's that when we look at our experience, and again, the physical realm around us is the easiest to look at, concepts give us the world.
I could say something about that, but I won't, because we want to practice with it, okay?
Ron asks, is this a kind of meta-awareness? Well, I think that would be a little too conceptual a way of describing it. I mean, it would work. You could think your way into it. But the idea is to imagine richly, to let ourselves engage fully the conceptual activity that gives us our ordinary experience. So we're within ordinary experience, but, you know, we are focusing in a very different place. And it's kind of a meta place, you could say that.
So Ron's still thinking about meta, but I'm not going to comment on that. So let's do that, okay?
So for, again, 3 or 4 minutes, seeing if we can engage the power of concepts to give us our known world. That's what we're imagining. That's what we're letting ourselves experience. Okay, do that for about 3 or 4 minutes. Okay, so let's come back together, and I'm curious to see what your experience, what your experience is. So Hayward says, concepts are imagined and yet seem so real. So this is very interesting, right? You're using the word imagined, Hayward, in kind of our ordinary sense of imagined, I think. You say, well, they're not real, they're just imagined. But what Rinpoche is saying here is to say that something is imagined isn't in contradiction with saying that it's real. I didn't say that very well because I got distracted by other comments here. Let me try to say that a little differently. The concept gives us our sense of what's real. And when we understand that the concept is, you know, only a concept, that doesn't eliminate the realness of the real. It does. If it was just that we found ourselves with the realness of the real, then we wouldn't have thought our way, or we wouldn't have felt our way, or imagined our way into the power of concepts. That's what Rinpoche is asking us to do here. So yes, the reality of the world that concepts give us, the conceptual reality, is not real in the way we think it is. And what Rinpoche is offering here as a way to explore that is seeing that, seeing into the power of concepts, letting ourselves really imagine fully the power of concepts. So let's see, Sudhi is getting ready to quote Rinpoche, but she hasn't yet. So let's take a look at David. He says, looking out the window, thick green bushes give way to tree branches beyond, to some space and more branches beyond that and beyond that sky. I think of layers and depth of more than meets the eye, room for further exploration. Okay. So I don't know exactly how that ties in to kind of investigating or imagining the power of concepts, the magic that concepts work, except that everything you've described, and of course every time we describe something, every time we use words, is an act of conceptualization. So within the conceptualizing, there's the truth, not the truth of what we conceptualize, that was the first exercise we did, but the truth of conceptualizing, the power, the reality, the aliveness of our conceptualized way of engaging the world. That's where we're looking. Okay. Let's see, Ileana says, concepts can be open to other meanings and other feelings. Our imagination can help in this opening, imagining that it could be different. Yes, that's true. But you want to be careful not to jump too quickly out of the conceptual realm, because what we're exploring here is the power of concepts, right? Yes, concepts can be opened. In fact, that may be what emerges here. And imagination can help with that, and we can imagine that it could be different. And Rinpoche does, in fact, say exactly that. He says, we've lost the power to imagine that things could be different, right? But first we want to engage the power of imagining. So if you look at the top of page 7, Rinpoche says, from the moment we imagine our way into the heart of our own being. So it's interesting. Our conceptual reality can be a way of imagining our way into the heart of our own being, because we essentially live in a conceptualized realm. That doesn't mean that's, you know, the final truth, but it's where we live. So from the moment we imagine our way into the heart of our own being, the limits on our knowledge begin to lose their hold. It is not a matter of discovering secret knowledge or arriving at revolutionary insights. We simply find it available to us. So we don't go looking for it, but we find it available to us to imagine that what has been constructed could be constructed differently. Right? At the end of that paragraph, he says, the gateways of the possible open to a new way of knowledge. And then he makes this connection that I'm really trying to emphasize here. He goes on to say, to imagine fully that we conduct our own reality into being, we do that with our concepts to start with, right? Is to imagine the power of imagination, and thus to multiply that power. So that kind of goes back to the meta sense, right? If we imagine imagining in the sense that Rinpoche is talking about it, if we engage the fullness of imagining, then we multiply the power of imagining, right? And then we realize that we could imagine differently. But first we start with the idea that right now in our ordinary experience as it is, we're already imagining, and as he says here, we're actually exercising our creative freedom in each moment. So that's the kind of very interesting approach that Rinpoche offers here. Very, you know, we've talked about knowledge that's at the edges of the known or in the gaps between what's known, or within the known. Here we're talking about a knowledge that just is the known, but it's imagined with a richness and a fullness that gives it this aliveness. Okay, Michael says, the belief that we can create or destroy the world is scary, right? So we can do that with our imagination or our concepts. It is probably necessary, if we entertain that possibility, to also believe that we only construct a world that exists in an imaginary space. Well, a lot would depend on what you meant by imaginary there. But then it is easy to say that doesn't mean much. See, I think if you understand imagination the way Rinpoche is saying here, it means a great deal. Because there isn't anything but this imagined world, but that doesn't make the world less real. It may make it real in a different way. The hope that we could see everything transformed, more full of color, depth, resonance, that seems worth cultivating. But then I would still want to believe that I had contacted something real, reliable, and a home ground to which I might return. So I think that has, you know, I can't answer that comment. I think I can just say that's a great place to explore. That's exactly what you want to be looking at. If you have a sense that you're losing something that's deeply meaningful, well, we're going to talk about that in the few minutes we have left. We'll come back to it. Sudhi says, our reality / experience is rooted in our concepts, our beliefs, and our beliefs / concepts are empty and insubstantial. This is so powerful, this knowing. Yet the conditioning pulls me to my habits of seeing things as substantial. Right, we see things as substantial, that is to say, we imagine them as substantial. And so if we imagine the imagining, or if we imagine the power of the conceptual, now we have a very interesting, really wonderful avenue for exploration. And Ron says, it's powerful to reimagine imagination, and that is pretty much what we're doing. Now, in the couple of minutes left to us, I want to go to just one part of love of knowledge. Let me say, although I can't really justify what I'm going to say here because we don't have time, but the first few pages of the reading from Love of Knowledge, so starting at page 269, although he's talking in different terms, he's talking about, first of all, reason, and then he's talking about inquiry, and he's talking about not knowing. All of that, I think, relates to the same thing we've been exploring, which is that you could imagine, you can explore the way in which we imagine the world. Because when you imagine the world, it also becomes unknown in a certain way. You could reimagine the conceptual, and you could reimagine positions. And these are the things that get talked about here. And again, I don't really have time to discuss that, but I will point to one, you know, very powerful formulation here on page 274 of Love of Knowledge. I think it has a lot to do with what with what the time space knowledge is, vision is about. He's saying like a couple of things, I guess. He's talking about inquiry, and he says free and open inquiry, this is about 10 lines down, free and open inquiry sees through the truth of what the bystander knows. So that has to do with imagining the power of imagining, I think. Investigating how that truth is set up without setting up a competing truth. So it's a different way. And Ron, I'm going to fit this in, he says, in a way we can celebrate our limits as a doorway into appreciating how such limits are the products of vivid imagination. A great magical trick. Yes, as long as you understand magic as something powerful and not just an illusion. That gives us the illusion of the real. Yeah, it may give us the illusion of the real, but the power to do that is not itself an illusion. We can see through the truth of what the bystander knows, and that's the power of imagination. And then he says, it's not a question, this is right in the middle of the page, it's in italics, it's not a question of learning new techniques or practices, but of giving up unquestioned loyalty to the techniques and practices that we are already practicing in every moment. So I'm going to reformulate that just a little bit. I think the techniques and practices that we're practicing in every moment are the techniques and practices of a conceptual reality in which we put everything in its place. And we reimagine that. Right? And in doing that, we give up our loyalty to the conceptual realm. We don't accept the truth of the conceptual realm. We imagine the power of that realm. And we can do that by imagining the power of concepts or by imagining our way into the truth of what the conceptual world gives us. Those are the two things that we explored earlier. Now, I want to emphasize at the end, it's an important point, and this relates to what Michael said before. Michael said, if you accept the power of imagination in this way, it's scary. From time to time, especially, lately I've been thinking about this quite a bit, this idea that proceeding in this way can be scary. We can be afraid to proceed in this way. And Rinpoche addresses that. Rinpoche doesn't talk in TSK too much about things like fear or courage or doesn't talk so much about human emotions. But they come up from time to time, and I think they're actually very powerful in the places he mentions that. So here in the last paragraph on page 274, he's still talking about this free and open inquiry, and I think we can connect it to the idea of imagination. Free and open inquiry offers no target for the fear with which the self responds to inquiry that calls the founding story into question. Whatever comes up, even the fear that our usual understanding is just a construct, Michael's way of putting that was the belief that we are creating or destroying the world, which isn't quite the way I'd want to say it, but it's pointing toward the same thing. When we know how to inquire, when we know how to imagine, we don't need to worry about that, the fear that there is nothing, there will be nothing substantial. And that sounds like kind of a philosophical fear, but an existential fear, you might say. I think it's the fear of, a fear that really comes up. Like when we inhabit the world, and we have something in our attitude toward our own experience that is being called into question and that seems fundamental, then there is a fear there. But he's saying we don't have to worry about that. And if we could read on just a little bit, he says, if we see each position only as an instance of knowledge actively positioning. So what does that mean? It means we feel fear and we say, oh, I'm afraid. But if instead we imagine our way into the feeling of fear and we say, and we don't say anything necessarily, we just feel our way into the fearing, you know, the dynamic of fear, of being afraid, then there's no target, you could say. He says, inquiry cannot be crushed by the gravity generated within existing fields of being. So we've talked about gravity from time to time. I won't go into it now, but the basic sense is we always have a tendency to stop and say, as Sudhi said, we always have a tendency to stop and say at some point, this is real, this is solid. There's no getting away from it. Right? And what Rinpoche is saying here is there is nothing that is real and solid in that sense, right? The gravity that our concepts proclaim, it doesn't operate. Right? Because in inquiry, in imagination, everything is open. Randomly, we'd have to look at that word. Can't do that now. Randomly and without limitation to sight, to sound, to images, to meanings and feelings alike, to fear as well as joy, to pain as well as pleasure. So if fear comes up, we can imagine our way into the fear. And in doing that, it loses its gravity, it loses its substance, it loses its substantiality. Now, I think there are two steps there, and then we'll have to stop because I've kept you late. Two steps there. One is to acknowledge the fear, because we may not want to do that, because we're afraid of acknowledging the fear. Why? Because we're afraid that the fear will be substantial, and that means it will take us over. So we have to be willing to acknowledge the fear. We need to have a certain kind of courage that we can to do that. And that courage is available to us because we're giving up our commitment to the world, that the conceptual world, the descriptive knowledge world, if you want to put it that way, that we accept. And so I think the most powerful place to engage this kind of practice is on the level of feeling in this sense, this kind of emotional sense. If we feel fearful, if we feel anxious, if we feel that we don't know, if we feel confused, all of the positions that come up, and there's a wonderful discussion elsewhere in Love of Knowledge about these kinds of reactions by the self, we have to be willing to give up their reality. We have to be willing to imagine our way into them, and also to imagine our way into the power of conceptual understanding, which makes it seem like there's something solid there, that we're not, you know, that's the end, and we're plunged into despair or whatever. I mean, you know, I'm going a little too far. Ron says it sounds a little like going for refuge in the Buddhist sense. Do we take refuge in knowledge? Do we take refuge in time and space? We take refuge in a deeper understanding, in a new vision of reality. Because in that vision, there are no limits that really operate as final limits. Okay, let's stop there. Thank you very much, everybody.